accession number 23370, reel 3.
Bernard Cox, reel 3. So as your demob day came nearer, were you counting off the days?
We had a problem because it was difficult to get replacements for myself and a couple of the other guys who were in the because we were sort of, I suppose, particular trades. You couldn't find many people that did the sort of thing that we did. And my demob group was I think was 76, and that was a very large demob group throughout the country, and I think it was spread over several months, I didn't have a particular date at the time, and we just had to, I mean, we could have been kept in until they wanted to let us go. I don't think there was any you didn't have any legal right to get out, let's put it that way, but not as far as I'm aware anyway. But I was held back. There were a lot of people in my group got demobbed before me, simply because we had to wait for a suitable replacement for me. And they've eventually got a chap called Len Horton, who came there for, Len must have been there some time while I was there and taken over. And then I was able to go.
But yeah, so you had to hand over to him.
Hmm.
Yeah, but he must have the general like things done.
That's right. Yes, yes. Get into the routine of what was going on. Mm. When I first got there, the general had come from the War Office, and he had his own lady secretary. But she, I don't know whether she didn't want to stay in the Territorial Army, or perhaps she wanted to get back to the War Office. But I was posted up there as his secretary, so after I got there for a couple of weeks, she went.
Yeah. Right. So what were your thoughts? What did you want to do now? You know, had you decided to go back to the shipping company?
Mm. Well, the thing was that while I was in the army, in London, I met my first wife. And so she lived in Kensington, and we were in Kensington. So I was... had a girlfriend in London, and simply when I came out of the army, I went back to work in the city. So I was quite happy to do that at the time.
So you were glad to get out of the army then?
I mean, you didn't want to spend your life in the army, so obviously when the time came to get out, yeah.
So what do you think the army taught you?
It made you sort of be able to look after yourself, weren't you? I mean, didn't rely on anybody else to in Civvy Street. I mean, you were able to I suppose that's a certain amount of discipline, isn't it, in your life? I suppose discipline was the main thing, really, wasn't it?
And you'd met a lot of different types of people, I suppose, as well, hadn't you?
Yes, yeah.
Sort of mixed at the top.
Yes, yeah. Oh, yes, 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 all kinds.
Do you think it influenced the way your life carried on from there? Time in the army?
Probably, yeah. Yes, because I think we've got friends now who are in the forces, and you still hark back to it because... everyone in those days had a certain amount of respect and discipline, didn't you? Which I find is doesn't seem to be around these days. It's a different generation, wasn't it?
So, your working career then, you went back to the shipping company.
Yeah. And I stayed in the shipping company until 1950, and. I decided I didn't want to live in London. That was basically what it was. I'd done it all. And I didn't really want the life in London. I didn't want going to work on the tube every day and getting home. You basically work for the weekends. And couldn't really see a lot of future. there, and I thought I would. I didn't want to live in London, so I decided to get out. I was engaged to my wife at the time, but I decided to come back to Cheltenham. And the intention was, I thought I would use my shorthand to try and get a job somewhere, as like a secretary to company director, that sort of thing. But as it happened, that didn't. Although I tried, I didn't get anywhere with it. Came back and worked for a company where I stayed for 42 years.
Right. What were you doing there?
I was in sales.
Right.
Sales administration.
Right.
Mainly, call it that.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what you stayed with till you retired?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So quite a big influence on your life, really.
Oh, the army would be, yes, yes, yeah, yes. Mm. Yeah. I mean, I suppose I'm one who's always looked after myself, can I put it that way?
Yes.
In other words, you've had to make all the decisions basically myself, yeah.
Mm. Mm. Yeah.
Which I suppose the army would help you. I mean, yes, you had to look after yourself, and that carries on through your life, doesn't it?
Yes. Because, I mean, there were actions going on at this time when you were in other parts of the world, weren't there? But, I mean, you...
Yeah. Well. Unfortunately, what happened was I got I was married in 1951, mm-hmm. and I got called back into the army.
Did
you? Yeah. I think it was to do with the Russians, and they called people back into what they call Z training. So I think I've been married 6 weeks and got called back into the army.
So
but it was only a fortnight. You went back for 2 weeks.
Where did you go?
Taunton.
Uh-huh.
A place called Norton Fitzwarren.
Yeah. Uh-huh. What did they have you doing there?
Complete waste of time. I don't know what I was supposed to be doing there, to be quite honest.
Mm.
We just got issue with uniform again. And a lot of people went off doing things. So there was talks and lectures and... both things I can't remember now, but to be quite honest, I think I went back there because I was a shorthand writer, because one day somebody told me I was down there for a special reason, which I never found out what it was, and at the end of 2 weeks I came home. It was just regarded as a complete waste of time. Yeah. Mm. So but it was miserable.
Mm.
yeah very annoying, very upsetting. Yeah. Mm. Especially if I've been married 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So not a good experience, really.
No.
You didn't want to go back.
No.
You never got called back again, or.
No. But funny experience. Yeah, mm. Always. Occasionally you'd have dreams that you were never going to get out of the army somehow or other. I don't know, but it was, that's true.
Yeah.
You could sort of have a dream that you just couldn't. You were never going to get out of the army. Mm.
Do you keep in touch with any fellow
NATO? No, it's a long time ago. No.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Okay. What do you think about the way the Britons treat their ex-servicemen? Do you think, you know, we look up to them enough, or, you know, treat them with enough respect, or?
Well, I think I would say that the general population probably does. But I would think that the actual army council or whatever they are and the government don't.
Mm.
I think they give them a pretty raw deal, actually.
Mm.
Let's put it that way.
Mm.
I think they give them a very raw deal. Mm.
Yeah.
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 I mean, when you read the paper, that you know, people who have done all that, fought for 5 or 6 years and, you know, give their lives for the country or whatever, and then they can't get a decent pension, and and I just think that, yeah, they, I don't think they, as a matter of fact, I think if there was another war, I couldn't see many people volunteering to go. That's the way I feel about it.
Mm. Mm.
I certainly wouldn't.
Yeah. Lovely. Any other sort of stories or memories that come to mind?
I don't think so particularly.
Mm.
I remember that we didn't used to like some of the regular soldiers, not the regular NCOs. I remember very well in being in Cirencester, and we were in a big hangar with both the ends of the hangar were open, I think, and there was some guy there who was a corporal, and he was that ignorant, and he was storming around. We all had to sit on the floor, hundreds of us, and I can remember him charging about, saying that we only regarded people like him as being in the army because he wasn't fit to do anything else in civil life, this sort of thing. And they would treat the guys pretty badly, make them sort of do strenuous things, have them running about all the time, things like that. And it was quite strange, because I remember saying to somebody one day, this particular guy, couldn't remember his name or anything now, but I said, he's going to kill someone. And after I left Cirencester, somebody did die.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, through him.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably heart or something like that.
Yeah. So he was a real bully then?
Yes.
Really?
I think he was just dead ignorant, and he had some sort of chip on his shoulder about people who were perhaps like us, who were sort of better educated or whatever, you know. And I think they, yeah. And I remember being in Colchester, and we had a very good sergeant, but there was another platoon had a guy who was pretty awful. And after we'd come back from exercises, running about, all, you know, good packs all day long, and we're in our barracks, he'd have his squad, who'd done the same out there, running around the barrack square until they dropped.
Really?
yeah and it was sort of quite well known that he came from Bristol. And there was no way that he'd ever go home to Bristol, right, because there were too many people looking for him. Yeah.
Oh.
So you did have people like that in the army, who I think did the army a disservice, actually. They didn't achieve anything, not in my opinion, by it. Well, I think we did far better with the cyber sergeant we had than someone like that. Mm. He was hated.
Mm.
So those are sort of experiences you come across.
Yeah. Mm.
But other than that, my army time, most of my army life was quite an easygoing, really.
Because that bullying, people tell me that there wasn't much of that during the war when they were training people, but it seemed to be a thing that came in later. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you could understand why things were sort of strict, and because you had to be disciplined, and it's no good going somewhere not doing as you were told attitude. But the war was over as far as we were concerned, and I think these fellas were just they had three stripes on their arm, and they were God's gift.
But the army obviously tolerated them.
Don't think they knew about it,
really.
Don't think the officers and that probably knew half of what went on. I wouldn't think so. No.
That's the danger, isn't it?
Mm.
You know,
yeah, they were little tin gods, you know.
Yeah.
Some of them were. I mean, they weren't all the same, but certainly there was certainly a lot of them were. Mm.
When you were at Cirencester, did the ranks mix very much, or was it still quite strict?
No, you didn't have no. It was just you had your sort of sergeant who was in charge of your platoon, who was your instructor.
Yeah.
I think we had one or two church parades where you may have had officers and that, but no, we didn't see a lot of the officer class. Not to mind, I can't remember that now.
Because they lived a different lifestyle, really.
Yes. I remember during that very cold winter. I mean, when I say it was cold, it's the coldest winter on record. It was even worse than the one in 63 or something. I think it started to snow way before Christmas. I can remember coming to the station in Lecampton. The train came through there. Did it come through Lecampton? No, it came through Sarah. We got in Cirencester. Came into Lansdowne Road, but when we all marched to the train in Cirencester, and all the roads were covered in snow and ice.
Yeah.
And I went to London, and it stayed like that for months. And so there was no, and I was in this holding company, there was no heat or anything like that. And we were put on tasks to do cleaning up outside. We were outside all day, and I remember there was this sergeant's mess. And one of them said, come on into the sergeant's mess. where it was warmer, because we weren't doing anything really. And we went in, and there was a warrant officer came in, and I mean, he was going to put us all on charges because we were in the sergeant's mess, and yet we'd been asked, like, to come in because it's warmer in there. So you had these sort of people who were okay, and you had the other ones who were...
Did you resent the superior conditions of the officers and the NCOs?
Not really. No, don't think so. I mean, they had to, there was a sergeant's mess and the officer's mess, but we never went in. When I was in London, there wasn't any sort of officer's mess. They used to go, everybody went home in the evenings. You know, we went back to where we were, and the officers went home to where they were living. They weren't in barracks or anything. I think they probably had married quarters or... So that there wasn't any sort of officer's mess that I recall, no.
Yeah, so it was just like a job, really.
Yeah, very much so.
Excellent. Anything else that you remember? Oh, difficult to...
Don't think so particularly.
Yeah.
I mean, we always used to be seen... I always used to be seen to be travelling around somewhere. You were always sort of on trains and that sort of thing. I always seem to remember always travelling around. They would never... staying in one place for very long. Even if he was only coming home to Cheltenham, but you just seem to be forever moving about, you know.
Well, it's been a very interesting tale.
Yeah. Good.
So, Bernard Cox, thank you very much, and that's the end of Reel 3.
All right.
Bernard Cox, Reel 4. So you were just saying when we were chatting there that you've always been a bit of a musician. What did you play?
A tenor sax.
Yeah, played that in Civvy Street.
Before I went into the forces. Yeah.
So did you play in the forces?
No, I didn't play in the forces. But as I was saying earlier on, when I was in Science Sister, we were getting our new kit from coming up from basic training, and a fellow in front of me was reading the newspaper, the Melody Maker. And said, did I know who he was? And I said, no, I didn't. And it was John Dankworth. And he actually played in the camp band. There was a group, and they played for dancing. And John Dankworth played there. So we used to go down and listen to him. But he played clarinet more in those days. And then he played alto sax when you sort of see him. And not long after I left Cirencester and got posted back into London... And I was reading the Melody Maker there, and John Dankworth's picture was in there, and he'd gone from, I don't know what happened, but he was no longer in Cirencester. He was a resident band on the Queen Mary.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Was he well known when you were in Cirencester?
Yes, I knew his name, but I didn't know who he was standing in front of me. Yeah.
Was he friendly or...?
It was the only time I really spoke to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yes, he was, yeah. Mm. But I did get to meet... one of the other fellas in the group, and he wanted me to come to Cheltenham and pick up my tenor sax and go back and play with them. But to be quite honest, they were far away above my standard, and I think I got cold feet.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, but sometimes I wish. I should have done it really, but I got cold feet. Really, they were they were too good. Yeah.
Was music important at Cirencester? You know?
I just think they played in. It was a lot of soldiers there, and so they had a they must have had dances there, to which this they played, and of course girls used to come in from Cirencester or wherever. I hardly ever went to the camp dances when we were there. No.
Right. Did you mix it much with the townspeople of Cirencester?
No, not a lot. No. We'd go out for a drink, but you never had much money, did you? Mm. You know, you couldn't sort of afford to go boozing in the pubs. So no, we didn't. I mean, we were mainly I was mainly in the barracks or in the comp place during the week, and then if you were able to get away on the weekends, I'd come to Cheltenham. So,
right.
So no, not a lot, no. Yeah.
Okay, right. Bernard Cox, end of Reel 3.